Right, if you could just say your name.
Margaret Pearson.
And could you tell us the place of your birth?
Bolton, Lancashire.
So where did you live before you moved to Burnbanks?
In college, at Ambleside.
And before that, you'd lived in Bolton.
Before that, I lived at Bolton.
So can you tell us when you came to live at Burnbanks, the house number, and why you came to live there?
It would be October 1970, number 62, Burnbanks. And I came to live there because I was appointed teacher at the school. And in those days, the governors of the school found it quite difficult to attract staff because of accommodation problems, and so they reserved a house at Burnbanks for the infant teacher. And so I was offered to go and live there when I became the teacher.
Oh, when you got there, what were your first impressions of the place?
Well, it was very strange, really, because I wasn't what you would call a country person. I'd always been, or I'd always thought that I was a townie. And living in Ambleside was quite a shock to the system to start with. But then when I moved to Burnbanks, I really thought that I was in a different world altogether. And it took quite a long time, really. I have to say that we were made very welcome by the people who were already living there, and we went on over the years to make some very firm and long-lasting friendships with people. But it was very, very strange. It was very quiet, no traffic about, and it did take a bit of getting used to, really, to start with.
So what were the buildings like at the time you moved there?
Oh, prefabs, and they looked a little bit short of paint and that sort of thing on the outside. I think I made a bit of a fuss about the outside paint. We decorated inside, and I think we were sort of rather radical, really, in our interior decoration at the time. Because it seemed to be quite different to everybody else's, but it was a good house. It was quite cold. It took a lot of heating. It did cost us quite a lot to with oil-fired radiators and so on, to heat the house. And we had a coal fire. And it did take a little bit of getting used to because it was quite on the chilly side. Because there wasn't a lot of insulation, but it was all right, and we soon got used to it, really.
Who paid for decorations inside and out, or any improvements that you needed?
We paid for indoor, and the North West Water that it was then paid for the outdoor decoration.
And what about things like the traffic in the village and the condition of the roads?
It was quite good. I mean, from what I can remember, this is the trouble. I wonder whether, you know, my memory will quite. It's a long time ago. No, from what I can remember, it was the road was quite good. We were on the back road, and the back road was rather bumpier than the bottom road. The bottom road, I think, was quite well paved, but I think ours was quite rugged in some ways, and where we parked at the beside the gate. We just had one car when we first went there, and we had to park outside, and it was a bit of a struggle sometimes for other vehicles to get past, you know. And I remember one day when the dustbin van came up and had such a struggle to get past it. It keckled over and they had to get rescue vehicles out to pull the refuse van off the siding, and that was really because our car was parked there.
Was there much traffic around?
It would mainly be works traffic. I mean, there was quite a lot of works traffic then, because of course there was a working yard there, and so there were vehicles of all types really. Would be backwards and forwards Land Rovers and smaller vans and large, you know, it was quite a busy village really in terms of transport. And all the houses then had at least one car, I would think. There wasn't a lot of visitors, I don't think. Just really family visiting people who lived there. But mainly works traffic, I would think.
And what about the condition of the sort of general land around there and the wildlife that you saw?
Well, we had all sorts came into our back garden. We had there were badgers came in and deer, a lot of birds. We had glowworms in the garden, because I can remember John getting an article printed in the Herald, because he'd written in to talk about the glowworms lighting up the steps. We had an enormous number of steps up to our house. And you'd see it lit up. It was like a runway with glowworms at each side of the steps. There was quite a lot of quite a lot of wildlife. And one day, and we were just talking about this last night. I'd left a chicken that I was going to cook, and I'd left it because it had been defrosting. I'd left it in the kitchen, and the kitchen window was open because it was quite steamy. And came through to the kitchen to put this chicken in the oven. It must have been a Sunday, I think, and the chicken wasn't there. And I went through and accused John of hiding this chicken. I said, where's my chicken? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. However, in the end, we went on a search, and this chicken, a raw chicken, we found it halfway up the garden, half eaten. So we don't know whether it was a fox or just a hungry cat or what it was, but there was obviously something out there that took a liking to the chicken before we got it cooked. But we did see a whole range of animals and birds. And
was the land around in good condition? Was it maintained?
Yes, it was really. Yes, I think it was, because you know, just at the bottom of our gate would be the telephone box, and there was that area there. But it was used a lot, because I mean there were a lot of people then sort of living on the back road, and people would walk up and down there, and it wasn't overgrown or anything. You know, it was quite easy to get around, and. From what I can remember, it all seemed to be quite well maintained, and the gardens were looked after mainly. And yes.
So in your house, who lived there at the time that you moved in and during your time there?
John and I were just newly married, because we were married in October 1970. And so that was our first house. And then Helen was born in September 73. So we just lived on our own until she was born. And my mum and dad came up quite often from Bolton. John's parents lived locally. They lived at Shap at the time. They had a cafe at Shap, and he worked there with them for quite a while. So there were just the three of us then when Helen came, until we moved into Penrith in February 77, it would be, I think, because we felt that we ought to get into the housing market really and buy a property. And that was the only thing. We were quite sorry to leave, but we felt that was what we needed to do at the time.
Can you tell us a little bit about your house, what it was like inside in terms of the rooms, what the facilities were, how you cooked, how you heated the house.
Right, so you would walk in through the front door straight into the lounge, and which had a fireplace, an open fireplace. And then leading from there would be all the other rooms in the house. So as you stood with your back to the front door, there would be a bedroom on the right, which became the nursery. And the bedroom on the left, which was our room, and then out of there you would go into the passage at the back of the house that a third room led off to the right, and then there would be the pantry, the walk-in pantry, which was really very useful. And then next to the pantry would be all of these led off that passageway at the back. Then there was the bathroom, which was a really peculiar shape. It was because it was cut across the corner. It was very odd shape. I'd never seen a bathroom like that before, and it was very, very cold. You didn't linger in there. And then at the end of the passage was the kitchen, and I think we had we would have an electric cooker. At that time, when we were first married, we didn't have very much money because I'd just come out of college and this was my first job. And John was working with his parents and didn't really get a wage. You know, we just got things as and when. And so we bought quite a lot of our furniture from Shap. There was a little, now I can't remember the name, this little... A man had a little shop there that sold all manner of bric-a-brac and things, and quite a lot of things came from there. In fact, this lamp here came from there. And we had orange boxes that I painted and that sort of thing, you know, in our lounge. And we had furniture that we'd been given from various family. But at that time, it was traditional, I think, to buy electrical goods through the electricity board. And you would buy cookers and heaters and that sort of thing, and buy them and pay for them on your electricity bill at the end of, you know, every quarter or whatever it was. You'd pay a bit off. And that's what we did, really. My carpets all came from a cheap carpet warehouse in Bolton, and my mum was bringing some up the motorway, and my dad wasn't very terribly well at the time, and she had these carpets rolled up in the back of her car and was stopped by the police and asked about them and where she was going with them and what she was doing, and she was bringing them to Burnbanks. So really we managed on very little, shall we say, to start with. The last little bit would be there was a sort of storage place in off the kitchen, and a separate toilet there, and then that would lead out through the back door into the garden. But that was the main accommodation there.
So in your bathroom, you did not linger. What was actually in there in terms of
A bath and a wash basin. That was all. There wasn't a shower. I think that was it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Frosted windows.
And heating was, you said you had it on.
We had an open fire, mm-hmm. But it didn't heat any radiators or anything. I don't think it heated the. No, I don't think there was a back boiler in it. No, I'm sure that it was just an open fire, and so we would have an immersion heater. How did we heat the water? I'm just trying. It must have been immersion heater, I think. I'm sure we didn't have a back boiler. And then we had oil-fired plug-in radiators in each of the rooms as backup, particularly in the bedrooms, because, again, they were very cold. It was just something that we got used to, I suppose, over time.
Where did you keep your fuel?
It was a little coal, not a shed, but a bunker behind the house.
Can you tell us a little bit about how things happened in your home, like who did the housework and the chores, and if you had a routine that was...
Yes, well, I did. I did most of the housework initially. John had a lot. He was out a lot because he had a lot of sort of part-time jobs. He worked with his parents in the cafe, and he also was a school bus driver at from Simpson's Garage. He drove one of their buses, and he was a postie in Shap as well, walking up into Oddendale and places up there. And he did something else as well. Oh, he was a part-time fireman as well. That's right, at the fire station. So he was out and about all over the place. And then shortly after that, he started working at the ambulance station, which meant that he was working shifts. So he actually did quite a bit. I mean, he still does. He's always done a lot around the house, for which I was very grateful. But then I had Helen, and I only had 6 weeks off school maternity leave, because I had the first half of the autumn term off. I think I'd worked till the end of the summer term, 73, and then I would have half a term off and go back after that. And at that time, we lived behind Sylvia and George Hindmarsh, and Sylvia's mother-in-law lived opposite there. And round about that time, Sylvia's father-in-law died, and we asked Nana, everybody called her Nana Hindmarsh. She started helping out a little bit with Helen, and she started doing some work in the house, some housework for me, because I did find it quite challenging to have a husband on shifts and a baby and a full-time job and all the rest of it. So she used to come and twice a week and dust round, and if John was at home, because he'd been working night shift, she would take Helen off to her house and they'd play down there and have a walk out, and that was something that Helen has never forgotten, and going to Nana Hindmarsh's and having lemon cheese on bread. And she had this special little knife, that little tiny knife, about sort of 2 inches long, and with a flat blade, and she would spread her lemon cheese. And it's funny, because she never ate it at home. It was something special for eating at Nana's house.
Generally speaking, when you were eating at home, at home did you
eat? Oh, we ate in the lounge on our knees. Had our meal on our knees in front of the fire, because it was the only place that we could really keep warm enough. I can remember getting a bout of chilblains because I sat far too close to the fire. I really wasn't used to an open fire. Well, I had been when I'd lived in Bolton, but when I'd been at college, I hadn't. And I'd sort of forgotten that you shouldn't be sitting so close. But that's what we did, because it was one way of really... enjoying your meal and be warm at the same time.
Can you tell us about what sort of entertainment you had at home in terms of radios or local
players? We had radio, we had television, we would have record player, and yes, I think we still used records then, and tapes. I think probably cassette tapes were just sort of starting then. I can't just remember when they came in, but I think we would have tapes. But we certainly had ordinary records that we both had our own. John and I both had our own collection, and we had to, when we got married, we had to sort of sift through them, and we found that we duplicated a lot, so we seemed to have had the same sort of taste in music, and got rid of and sort of selected out things that we both had, but that would be about it, I think.
And you had a garden.
We had a big garden. Yes, it was huge, huge garden in the front and in the back. And it was very hard. I mean, it wasn't a sort of set piece garden. It was more of a wild garden. The back, I mean, John used to cut the grass, but that was about it, because it was very bumpy and lumpy. And it was a bit like looking at the fell, you know. It was sort of, there weren't any made gardens really in the back there. At the front, again, there were a lot of things growing in there when we went. We had a massive, massive show of poppies, big, huge red poppies. I think we planted, I think he tried to grow some potatoes. I think he tried to put some potatoes in at one point, and was digging, and we'd had quite a bit of help from various friends from work that had come to help him, and he was trying to clear a bit where he thought he would grow some, you know, he would sort of go self-sufficient and grow some vegetables. And so he would get this rock out, and this friend had come to help him to dig this rock so that they could clear a bit of space. This rock, 3 hours later, they were still digging. And it was like an iceberg. It was just their very, very tip was there at the top. And by the time that they got down, you know, it took up nearly half the garden. So I think they sort of gave up on that idea. And then another day, he was digging in a different part of the garden, and thought he would... got to a tree root and thought he would just sort of move this bit of tree root. Well, it turned out it was a cable for, I don't know whether it was water, electricity or something, but he was just buried in the garden without any sort of warning. So we did have a few surprises like that. But he did try to grow a few vegetables, and but again, I mean, we didn't, it wasn't, because it was set, the house was set up high, and the garden was sort of stepped. It hadn't ever been laid out specifically as a garden, you know, but we just tried to keep it neat and enjoy what came in. We did put quite a bit of quite a few shrubs in, and larger bushes and that sort of thing, but we didn't have a lot of flowers, and but it was very pleasant, very, and a very nice outlook really for us, because we were quite high up and not overlooked ourselves, which was quite nice.
So apart from decoration, were any improvements done to the house while you were there?
I don't think so. No, we had an airing cupboard that was way up high on the right-hand side of the fireplace in the lounge. And we never did get something that was a bit more accessible. You know, you'd to climb up ladders to get in it. So we didn't use it very much. I don't think so, no.
Do you remember what the rent was?
Oh, it was very, very low. And we were trying to decide... this morning, actually, how much we paid, but it was minimal. I mean, it was only a few shillings, because I can remember that when we went to when we decided that we were going to buy a property, and we'd found one that we wanted to buy in Penrith, and we went to the building society and or the bank, and we had to fill this form in and state your outgoings, you know, and so we filled it all in, and we got a phone call after we'd come back home saying, you filled this in wrong, because you've only put a week's rent in here, and we wanted a monthly rent, and it actually was the monthly rent that we put in, but it was so low that it was amazing. But I can't remember just how much it was. But it was, I know, it was very little.
So you had Helen when you were living there.
Mm.
She went and talked about going to Nana's. Where else did she play? And did she play with other children?
Yes, she did. I mean, she played out on the front, as they called it, you know, on the front of Sylvia's house, and in front of the garages. And she would play there. I'm trying to think. You see, she wasn't that old when we went to Penrith. She would only probably be 5 when we went to Penrith. So when we were at Burnbanks, she tended to be more in the company of at least one adult, rather than actually going out to play with other children. I mean, she would play outside when there were other children out there, but there would be somebody with her, and it would tend to be, I think, in Nana's garden or outside her house if she was with her, or in our garden. Children used to come into our garden and play, because she was still quite small when we moved into town.
So when you were there, the school was in Bampton as it is now?
Yes, yes. And there would be, Mr. Ainsley was the head then. There would be, when I first came to Bampton, there would be about, I think there were about 36 children in the school then. I think 16 of them would be infants and 20 of them would be juniors. And he was here for, I think he was here another, yes, he would be here 7 years. When I first came, I would work with him for 7 years before he retired.
And were there many children came from Burnbanks?
There were quite a number, yes. And in fact, North West Water paid for a taxi to bring the children. Thomas Thompson ran that taxi and Joyce. But they didn't do it all the time. I think it would be Bob Buckle perhaps before that. I don't know, I think my memory is letting me down. But altogether counting the secondary age children as well, there would be probably be 12 or 16, I would think, at about that time, living up there. Mm.
And what was the relationship like between the Burnbanks children and the Bampton children, was it?
I think it was all right. I don't think... I think there would only be difficulties in the same way that there would be amongst any children. I don't think that that there was any difference made because they were from Burnbanks. Everybody seemed to get on all right and mix with everybody.
Can you just tell us what the school was like then in terms of buildings, toilets, layout of the furniture inside school?
Right, we had... the infant classroom was where it is now, and the hall and the entrance porch. But when I first came, the entrance porch had huge, great poles, iron poles in it that we had taken out. It was where the old cloak rooms had been, and so there was very little room in there really, because they had had I think cages to put shoes in and things underneath, but they had been removed. Then the canteen was there, and Sylvia was the cook in the canteen when I came, and so she made all the meals. She planned the menus and did the buying and made the meals, and always made meals that children enjoyed and would eat. We didn't have the toilet block on then, because we did have the old outside toilets, which were not very spicy really. The stone building I don't think has changed at all. It's just the same, because there had been originally two stoves in the stone building, but that had a coke boiler, I think, in where the boiler house is now. But it didn't. There wasn't actually a fire in the classroom. You know, it just heated the radiators, and it was the same behind the wooden building. Because there was a coke house and a boiler house in there. Tommy Brennan used to come along to school, oh, two or three times a day and stoke this boiler, and Mr. Ainsley would do it occasionally as well. He probably did it at lunchtime or something, and put a pile of coke on the fire. The infant classroom was awful. It was so cold sometimes, it was unbelievable. I can remember trying to make a point of putting a thermometer in the classroom, and there were some days when it didn't get above 45. It was cold. And I mean, you know, it wouldn't happen, you wouldn't be able to run a school with it like that now. But there were some days when it was absolutely perishing. And we had these old outside toilets which used to block regularly. The pipes go under the schoolyard and into the garden at the back, which used to be part of the schoolhouse, which now is part of the school, and along through our back garden over into the septic tank, which is beyond our garden. And these pipes were old clay things, and they used to block regularly and fall to bits. And Tommy Brennan used to come along every Friday afternoon, regular as clockwork, and lift the manhole that was outside the it would be the girls' toilets there, and he would lift the manhole and get this scoop, and he would scoop all the muck out and all of the, regularly every Friday, just to keep it going and give it a good rodding, and then he'd toddle off back again home. So he kept them going for a long, long time, you know, long after they should have been condemned. But he was very, very conscientious at keeping everything running as best he could.
Okay. Right. Let's move on a little bit to going back to Burnbank itself. What were the facilities in Burnbank when you were there? Were there any, or was it just houses? Any shops?
No shops, no. There was the workshops and the office for North West Water, but nothing else. Quite a bit later on, I think some of the younger mums had one of the houses that wasn't being used. They sort of converted that into a little play group, I suppose it was, where they would just collect some toys and just do their own thing, really, and just have a meeting place away from their houses. But that's all I can remember, really, that there was.
And was there still evidence of the old buildings that had been there, like, you know, the Mission Hall and the canteen and things like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
So where did you go for facilities, like?
Penrith, really. Yes, because John worked in Penrith, and we only had one car for quite a while. And if he was starting, he often used to have to start work at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, and I would take him into work and take my laundry and go to the laundrette. I spent many a happy hour in the laundrette in Penrith, and I'd do my washing and get it dry, and then I would come back home to put the washing away, and then I would probably go back in later on to do some shopping and pick him up from work. And we had to sort of work it like that, really. His mum and dad, as I said, had a cafe at Shap, so I quite often went up there. I sometimes gave them a hand on a Saturday or in the holidays.
What was John working as then?
He started as an ambulance man then. Mm.
Do you remember what the local bus service was like?
I don't think there was one. No, I don't think there was. I might be. I mean, I certainly never used one because there wasn't anything that. Mm. No, I think people really relied on cars. Mm.
So, was there anything socially went on at Burnbanks itself?
No, people tended to. to either be out at work or be in their own homes, I think. They would come to Bampton for social things, but there wasn't much really. I suppose some would go to each other's houses, but no, I think it tended to be that people were either at home or at work or at something at Bampton.
And while you were there, did you go to church or chapel or anything? Where was this?
I went to church, and there were quite a lot of people did go to chapel. And then it sort of started to tail off because I suppose the older ones stopped going or moved away or whatever. I did go to church, but I didn't go terribly regularly.
Was that in Bampton?
That was in Bampton. Mm.
Okay. Were there any particular social activities connected with the church that sort of gave it special focus?
There would be the autumn fair, and the harvest festival was quite well supported then. And the Remembrance Day. I think those would be the main thing. Oh, and Christmas, of course, and Easter. I mean, those were the times when the church was really quite full. Funerals, nearly always, funerals of local people attracted a full church. And a lot of local people. I think it was more usual then to be buried in the churchyard rather than cremated. Probably tends to be half and half, I would think now, but certainly at that time, I think it was more usual to be buried here.
Do you remember who the vicar was at that time?
It was Canon German when I first came. And when he left, it would be Anthony Gann. And then after Anthony, it would be Chris Edmondson. No, it would be John Berry. Sorry, it would be John Berry. And then Chris Edmondson.
But while you were at Burnbanks, it was those two you first mentioned.
Yes, yes.
So the social life that went on in Bampton at that time, the time you were in Burnbanks, what do you remember?
I don't remember being. I ran a youth club for a while when we lived at Burnbanks. I think I gave it up when I moved into town. We would run a youth club on a Thursday night, John and I. We did that for quite a while. And that was, there were an awful lot of children about then. I think a lot came from Shap. And it seemed to be very busy. And I remember sort of 30 plus children some nights. I was on the parish council for a while, I think. There was a ladies' group that I wasn't actually involved in. I mean, I wasn't involved in a terrific amount because when I had Helen, it was difficult, you know, sort of working full time. And John was often out on shift, so. So I don't really remember anymore.
So when you were living at Burnbanks, about how many people were living there at that time? Or about how many houses were occupied?
I think most of the houses were occupied. I'm just trying to think. I don't think there were any empty ones. I think all of them were lived in. There was one empty one, but that was taken over by the RSPB. for their workforce. And certainly, I can't think of an empty one at all. It was really quite a thriving, thriving place.
So what was the sort of spirit like? Did it have something of a community spirit?
Yes, I think it did. It didn't have a community meeting place. So I suppose that was difficult, but everybody seemed to get on well together. I always felt very welcome. I know there was this thing about offcomers, you know, having to live there for so long before they felt at home, but we never felt like that. We always felt at home right from the start, and we always felt as if, we knew everybody and would have a chat with anybody that we saw. So there was never a lack of community spirit, even though there wasn't a sort of centre really to the village.
So where did most people come from? You came from outside.
Most people, I think, were fairly local, or local to Cumbria anyway. There were some who came. I can remember a family came from Blackpool Way, and I think there was another one from. There were several from Lancashire, or maybe round about Manchester, that sort of environment. Perhaps Dad coming to work there, you know, and then the family moving up. There was quite a bit of movement in and out, but as one family went, another one would come.
So who did most of these people work for?
For North West Water, yes, I think all of them did.
It's a big workforce.
Oh yes, it was a huge workforce. And some of the workforce were transported to other places to work. They weren't just working at the dam or up by the lake. A lot of people like George Hindmarsh would be out on the fells doing different things, but a lot of them were taken to Watchgate and Thirlmere and working in the forests there and so on. But I would think that we were quite unusual in that neither of us worked for North West Water, and I think we were probably the only family that didn't. I think everybody else would have some sort of a connection with working for the waterworks.
Special position.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So when people moved away, it was generally because their work moved them away?
Yes, yes. Some people left North West Water, but some were just transferred within the group.
So it wasn't lack of work?
No. I mean, it was much, much later, and I think it was long after we'd left there that they started to downsize a bit, you know, in terms of the workforce. But when we lived there, it was a huge employer.
So you talked to yourself about being a townie.
Yes.
Were there other people who also had that sort of adjustment?
I don't think there were as many because they all tended to be fairly local. And you know, I mean, even if they were from Shap or somewhere, it wasn't quite the same, you know, as coming from a big town.
Yeah.
I didn't find it difficult. I really enjoyed it, and we were very sorry to leave, and it was only because we felt we should be looking to buy a house that we left. It wasn't for any other reason than that. But I think most other people there would be some of these coming from Blackburn, Blackpool, a couple. They didn't tend to stay terribly long, but again, I think it was because of the nature of the job, really, rather than you know, not wanting to live there.
What do you think about Burn Banks now?
Well, I've not been up very much, actually, because, you know, I mean, since all this building's been going on, because we did go up. We went up before they actually started the project, because I take the grandchildren, I have two grandchildren, and I take them to see Sylvia sometimes, and we did go up one day, and it was a nice day, and we had a walk up to our house, and I was showing my grandson the house that we lived in, and the bedroom that his mummy had had when she was a little girl, and so on. He was absolutely fascinated. But it was very sad because it was all overgrown, and it didn't really like it. You know, it wasn't the place that I remembered. It seemed a lot smaller than we remembered, because I always had this vision, you know, of going up. Said we had these a huge number of steps up to the house, and you were always aware of it being a big space, really, you know, and a lot of room to be moving around in. And when we went up that particular day, it all looked as if it had shrunk, and that you know, the steps were covered in. You couldn't see them, and you had to sort of pick your way very carefully. And it just seemed very sad, really, that it's just not the same place. I mean, we've always gone to Sylvia's house, and that hasn't really changed, you know, because she's always kept it much the same, and we've always been made very welcome there, and so on. But actually venturing onto the back road and seeing what used to be, it just seems so odd, and it didn't look anything like it was that we remembered. So I think we're probably not that keen, really, on the, you know, what it'll be like when it's finished. I don't know. We might well go back and have a look then. But no, I mean, that was a particularly happy time in our lives, really. And it was a time before both sets of our parents got rather more immobile and so on. And it was a very happy time, and you know, we sort of made the most of it while we were there, I think.
Is there anything else you want to add about your experience of Burbanks? Anything you think we haven't talked about?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I just it was just a very special, really, part of our lives. We loved it, and I grew, I suppose, less like a townie. I still like to go back to the town, you know. I mean, I used to take Helen. John very rarely came with us because he was often working. I used to take Helen every half term and every end of term, and we'd go back to the the big town and so on. But we were always glad to come home again. Yes. We were very sad to leave, but it was just one of those things that we had to do.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.